That's Matthew 16, 21 to 28. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said. "This shall never happen to you." Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. Truly I tell you, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom."
Thanks, Nelly. Do have a seat.
The most recent restrictions are going to be very challenging for millions of people, including some of us who have family and friends in high category areas. We know how important human friendship is, face to face, not via Zoom. And to have this denied is going to be very costly. And the warnings are stark. If we don't follow the rules, then the virus will spread and it will lead to stricter controls. The government are pretty clear that we're in for a tough few months. But with their warnings comes a promise. If we'll follow the rules and the guidance, then by the spring, things will be better. There will be a reward for the months of cost. So they say. We shall see. Counting the cost is something Jesus speaks of in Matthew 16 to his disciples, the cost of following him. Let's just remind ourselves what came before and led to Jesus to speak like this. In Matthew 16, Peter says something none of the disciples have ever said. He confesses Jesus to be God's son. When asked by Jesus, "Who do you say I am?" Peter replies, "You are the Messiah," or the Christ, "the Son of the living God." And you'll remember we saw that he didn't just figure this out through his intellectual ability. He didn't work out the identity of Jesus. It tells us this was revealed to him by God. God the Father establishes the truth about his son. We saw that. Secondly, we saw that the truth about Jesus establishes the church. Jesus' confession is the rock on which Jesus builds his church. And as this truth is declared by Peter and the other disciples and Christians through the ages, so this is what opens the kingdom of heaven. And so we saw, thirdly, that the truth about the church establishes our purpose as the church. That is, we're key holders. As we unlock, as we open by declaring the lordship of Jesus, we open the gates of heaven. And Jesus welcomes them in as people hear and trust him. The question for us today is this: what does it mean to be in God's kingdom? What does it mean today for us as his disciples who confess Jesus as Lord? What does that look like? Well, the key verse for us is verse 24. "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." There is a cost to discipleship. Now, there is, of course, a choice. Notice how Jesus starts, "Whoever wants to be my disciple." There is no conscription, there's no arm twisting. But be aware at the outset, as soon as Peter makes his confession, what comes next? He says, "From confession follows cost." Realize there is going to be suffering. We're going to be walking the way of the cross. We follow the one who walked the way of the cross, and we're going to think about what it means to walk the way of the cross if we're his disciples. So what's the cost going to be? Well, firstly, it's going to be to deny yourself, to deny yourself. When you think you're to deny yourself, what do you think of? Maybe you're going to deny yourself sugar or chocolate because you're overweight and you need to deny yourself those things so that you might become fitter. It may be denial of purchasing some luxury good for a couple of months when you've got the money rather than just buying it on credit. Well, Jesus isn't talking in those sort of trivial categories. He's talking about something much deeper, much closer to home. I want to think about two senses of denying yourself. The first is this: to deny is to disown. To deny is to disown. To disown is that refusal to know someone, to deny you have any connection with them. Peter will do that at Jesus when he's arrested. Peter ends up saying, "I don't know the man." Maybe it was out of fear or shame or embarrassment. You know, if you're a parent, sometimes you might feel proud of your children. You might say you are proud of them, but not always. When they have a tantrum in the supermarket, when they take the biggest slice of cake at the party, and someone says to you, "Is that your child?" You say, "Oh, no. Whose child would that be? I can't imagine." I'm sure you never do that. In our inner self, though, sometimes there is something we want to disown. There's a me I don't like if it's exposed, and I want to disown it. I want to deny it because it's ugly. I'm ashamed of it. There's an inside that only you and I know, and God, of course, for he knows all the secrets of our hearts. There is no hiding from him. It's when that old sinful, rebellious self rises up, very often in our thoughts about others, at the envy or anger that bubbles up, that self-absorbed, self-determining me that gets upset when I don't get what I want. Well, Jesus says, disown it. Walk away from it. Walk instead the way of the cross. Now, before we can do that, we've got to recognize, of course, what's going on inside our hearts. We don't find that easy, because we always want to make out that we are better than we are. Maybe we're reluctant to disown the sin we want to cling on to. We feel it'll be too costly to forgive that person. It'll be too costly to love that person we're angry with. Well, Jesus calls us to walk a new path. He doesn't say it'll be easy, but he is with us and for us and promises to help us to do what we naturally don't want to do. There is a second sense to deny. The first is to disown. The second is this: to renounce, to renounce. When you get married, you renounce a single life. When you join the army, you renounce a civilian life. I should have asked David a bit more about this, and I'm sure he can correct me. You enter into an old, new way of life. You leave the old behind. For example, you sign up for the army. You sign up to new commitments and loyalties, to commanding officers, to the sovereign. You sign away some of your rights as a civilian. You no longer determine where you'll live or work. You follow orders. You deny yourself in order to affirm the authority of military discipline. Well, if we follow Jesus, we're surrendering to his lordship, to live under his rule, not our rule. We're renouncing self-rule. And Jesus doesn't ask us to do something that he hasn't done. He has accepted and affirmed his Father's will. He obeyed. Did you notice in verse 21, Jesus says he must go to Jerusalem. Jesus says he must be killed. Now, why does he say he must? Well, because that is his Father's will. We see that most clearly maybe in the Garden of Gethsemane. As Jesus nears the horrors of crucifixion, he says, "Not my will, yet yours be done." Jesus renounced his will, which would have been to abandon the way of the cross for his Father's will. And what a cost to such a denial. Denial of self is always costly. It's why so many in the Gospels turn away from Jesus. It's why so many today turn away from Jesus. Excuse me. The cost is too great. Think of the rich ruler who meets Jesus. He wants to follow, but he won't give up his riches. They have got a grip on his heart, and they come first. It's no different today with our money. I guess, will we give it away or will we stash it away? Jesus warns his disciples, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world? We think it would be fantastic to gain the whole world. Why deny that? Well, what about our career? The hours we give to it, the value we attach to it, it can grip our hearts. And ultimately, it can come first, before family or before our spouse. We never say that, but in reality, that's what's obvious to everyone else. Or what about our comfort? Time out for me. You deserve it. Go on, treat yourself. As John Piper puts it, entertaining ourselves to death. Is this the pattern we see in Jesus' life? His was a life of denial. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. How are you going? How am I going on denying what Jesus says I must do as his follower? Deny myself. How like Peter am I wanting a costless Christianity? A Christianity that has Christ without his cross, wanting to walk the way of comfort rather than the way of the cross. Jesus says to Peter something that is really striking. He said, if we want to walk that way, that is actually satanic. We're wanting to follow the ways of Satan because it has my concerns and not God's concerns. Where do I need to deny myself in order to walk the way of the cross? Secondly, denying yourself first. Secondly, taking up your cross. Again, what Jesus says isn't trivial. You know how we sometimes say, oh, we've all got our cross to bear. Maybe it's a tricky relative. Maybe it's a manipulative boss at work. Maybe it's a debilitating medical condition. For Jesus, there's one meaning to take up your cross. He's heading to death. If we're to be a disciple, we're choosing to follow the crucified Christ, and we must be prepared to do the same. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German pastor, wrote in his book, The Cost of Discipleship, this: when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. Very striking, isn't it? When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. Dietrich Bonhoeffer did exactly that. He died at the hands of the Nazis right at the end of the Second World War for his faith in Jesus. Now, that is not presently likely to happen to you or I. How then can I preach on this? I haven't experienced suffering as a result of my confession of Jesus as Christ like that. But this does have something to say to us. You will know something of the cost of following Jesus in your workplace or your unbelieving family if you speak up for him. For example, if you speak up on sexual ethics or the sanctity of life and a biblical point of view, whether at the beginning of life with abortion or end of life issues around euthanasia, you'll know there's a cost because you'll suffer rejection and scorn and mockery. You're unlikely to be promoted because that's too extremist. You may even lose your job. Come die with me, says Jesus. Have we really taken this on board? Look at what Jesus says in verses 25 and 26. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? He's saying there are two kinds of death. There's a tragic death that ends everything. It robs us of everything. We end up losers. We think, though, that we'll end up winners. But there is another kind of death that we embrace now, a death to self. And it is a hopeful death, because it's a death that leads to life. Here is the irony of what Jesus says. The way of sacrifice is actually the way of gain. Where do you and I need to die to self in order to walk the way of the cross? You'll never be a loser with Jesus. The way of the cross is the way to life. And this is the note Jesus ends on and will end on. We've seen the way of the cross is denying yourself and taking up your cross, finally and briefly finding life. After the strong warnings of the cost of discipleship, the cross was not the end for Jesus. In verse 21, when Jesus explained what lies ahead, he says he must be killed and on the third day raised to life. Death defeated, sins forgiven, resurrection victory. Suffering now and glory to come is the pattern for Jesus, and that is the pattern for all who follow him, because it is the way of the cross. If we'll give our life to him, which as we've seen means dying to self, then we will not lose but gain life. As he says in verse 23, whoever loses his life for me will find it. So the promise is not pie in the sky when you die. You enter into life, life to the full now as we follow Jesus. Its fullness is yet to come. But now we have hope and forgiveness and peace with God. What a contrast to the COVID crisis we're in. Daily we're reminded of the rising death toll. We hear of growing unemployment. Businesses collapsing, mental health issues for so many. And many are saying, what sort of life is this? Well, it's really no life, because life is found in Jesus, life that lasts for all eternity. This is the way of the cross. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. By way of response, we're going to listen to this glorious song by Isaac Watts, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. As we think about the way of the cross that was for Jesus, what it cost and what it brought us as a result. Let's sit and ponder on these words as we turn our minds then to this physical demonstration in the drinking of wine and the eating of bread. Ben and Richard are going to play for us.